Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.
Street gangs go international. Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is Which Way LA, KCRW's ongoing series on the issues Southern Californians care about. Los Angeles street gangs have long spread around the country and around the world, especially to Mexico and Central America. This week, the LAPD is hosting an international summit on what to do. Tonight, we'll talk with Chief William Bratton and others about how extortion and murder migrate across the borders. Can law enforcement agencies learn how to cooperate with one another? Will they ever be more than a temporary solution? First up, here's the news. Warman Only back with Which Way LA. Los Angeles street gangs have spread all over the U.S. Now they've become an international phenomenon. For the next 3 days, L.A. Police Chief William Bratton is hosting his counterparts from Mexico, El Salvador, Belize, and Honduras, along with the FBI, the DEA, and Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Sheriff Lee Baca also attended today's session. Chief Bratton, welcome to our program.
Well, good afternoon. Good to be with you.
How would you describe the internationalization of street gangs?
Well, what we've known for years is that the incubator that Los Angeles has become for street gangs has indeed spread back into Latin and Central America, much the same as the African-American gangs, the Bloods and the Crips. At an earlier time, it spread out into other areas in the United States. And so today's effort is to both certainly recognize that, but also see if we can't start developing ways to deal with this problem on an international as well as a national basis.
What's the implication in terms of crime? How much more difficult a problem is it when Los Angeles street gangs are also operating in other countries?
Well, it certainly compounds the problem, and one of the issues that we're seeking to address is that the gangs were increasingly seeing the borders of our, not only our city, county, state, but international borders as providing some degree of sanctuary. The idea that by moving out of one agency's jurisdiction into another, that somehow or another that we would lose track of them or they would become somewhat anonymous. The effort today is intended over these next several days to, particularly with the countries in Central America, along with Mexico and Canada, that having gang members who operate here in L.A. move back to those countries and vice versa, to try to develop a seamless web of intelligence sharing and analysis and tracking of these characters. So when they are deported, for example, from this country, that we ship them back with intelligence information so our counterparts in El Salvador and Mexico have information about their activities here in the United States, who they've associated with. And similarly, in those countries, if they know that the individuals in their jurisdiction have now migrated into the United States, to make us aware of that, that the intelligence is that they're coming back our way. What we've created in some respects is a merry-go-round potential. We know quite clearly oftentimes after they serve their sentences here and we deport them back to their country of origin, they attempt to come back again. And so we just want to improve our ability to keep track of them as they move around.
What kind of crimes are we talking about?
Oh, you're talking about everything out of the book, that basically extortion, murder, intimidation, kidnapping, certainly drug trafficking is always associated with these characters, as is the incredible amounts of violence that they engage in, both in this country as well as in the other countries who are attending today.
Chief, are we talking about criminal syndicates that are comparable to the Cosa Nostra and other kinds of international criminal activities, or are they something different from that?
Some of them are certainly comparable to that. MS-13, for example, a gang that originated in Central America, El Salvador, coming out of the revolutionary period in that country in the 80s. Many of the migrants that came to this country, both legally and illegally, eventually morphed into a gang here called MS-13. We now, through our federal colleagues, understand that that gang is in 40 different states. And so the federal government is very actively engaged with task forces concentrated on that gang. to a lesser extent, 18th Street Mexican Mafia among the Latino gangs, and then several of the African-American gangs have also developed into organized crime types of organization. Many of the gangs, most of them, are very much different. They're looser-knit. Their focus is on small geographic areas within the city or the county. They don't have anywhere near the organizational structure of a La Cosa Nostra type of situation. But that's something we also need to understand about these gangs, that over time they have morphed into many different configurations, and law enforcement has to be prepared to deal with them in any one of their manifestations.
How many people are we talking about? We've heard recently that there are tens of thousands of gang members in the Los Angeles area. What proportion of them are involved in this international activity?
Well, the state of California years ago created a system called Cal Gangs. That's the system to document and track gang membership. And with that system, with the definitions that it uses, that in the city of Los Angeles, by way of example, we have about 39,000 documented gang members, many of whom are inactive or not active full-time, but others, the hardcore, if you will, who are very active. And among that population is an even smaller population who are constantly engaged in crimes of violence. And as to what number of those moving in and out of the country, the Latino gangs in particular, certainly a much smaller subset, but I'll give you a figure that in any given day in the sheriff's jail population, which averages over 20,000, it's estimated that 7,000 of those individuals are illegal immigrants into the country, and that 4,000 of that number may in fact be repeat deportees. People have been deported who have come back into the country. So as it relates to the largely Latino immigrant gang problem, those numbers speak for themselves. The African-American gang problem is largely certainly people who are born in this country who are not immigrating, and their migration is across the country and certainly not across international borders.
To what extent is the presence now of Los Angeles gangs in El Salvador, Mexico, places south of the border, due to the fact that they are gang members that have been deported by the United States?
Well, that's some of what we would seek to determine by improving our intelligence sharing, gathering, and information exchange to get a better handle on how many of these people are, in fact, rotating routinely back through the Central American countries and then coming back here to the United States to once again commit crime. That is an aspect that we've got speculative numbers, but we're trying to lock that down with more certainty. This is a population that sort of ebbs and flows. People go in and out of activity levels within the gangs. We certainly know, unfortunately, that our prison systems, both here and in those countries, unfortunately foster gang membership, because to survive in those environments, you really have to seek the protection of whether it be a Latino gang or an African-American gang here in the American prison system, or the various elements of gangs once they get into foreign jails. It's a significant problem. However, the good news is that we're conscious of it. We're continually seeking to stay aware of its many manifestations and new growth. And in a historic way, this conference over the next several days is bringing together the largest gathering of law enforcement officials in this area from the international and national perspective that just about anybody who's been dealing with this issue over the last 15 or 20 years can remember coming together in this way. So we've got a lot of players that are interested in doing more. We're hoping through our respective partnerships and alliances to be able to, in a sense, force multiply the limited resources we have to work with it. And I'm very comfortable that we, from the law enforcement suppression side of the issue, can do more and can have a significant impact on what for last year was the first time gang crime increased in almost 5 years here in the city of Los Angeles. And so I'm hoping this year, the year 2007, as a result of this conference and ones that preceded it, and tomorrow Mayor Villagosa will be announcing his anti-gang strategy initiative for 2007, that as we end 2007, we'll have made a significant dent in the problem. We're not going to be able to eradicate it, unfortunately. It's just too big, but we can certainly mitigate very significantly its negative aspects, particularly the violence.
So suppression then is never going to be the total answer to this. Is that?
Oh, not at all. You hear Sheriff Bach and I always talk about that. That we kind of rest our way out of this problem. This is a three-legged stool, to use that analogy. You've got suppression, and I think right now the law enforcement component is the most cohesive, the most organized, the most focused, and I think as a result of that, you'll see some very significant law enforcement impact that we will be able to document, reduce murders, violence over the next year. But the other two elements, the other two legs of the stool, prevention, intervention, we certainly make efforts in both of those arenas that officers involved in schools, et cetera. But it really is going to be up to the political leadership, the public support for funding, the tough decisions to make relative to ensuring that money we put into those areas is being used appropriately in a focused way and is part of a systemic effort to make sure that this three-legged stool actually is sturdy and that not one leg of it is wobbling. Because to successfully deal with this problem, you cannot arrest your way out of it. You cannot expect without public safety that the other two elements will work. But the other two elements right now are the two that are really very, very wobbly at the moment. Connie Rice's report several weeks ago clearly showed that here in the city and county of Los Angeles, that we're all over the place with the money that we're throwing at this problem, and that money could be better spent if it was much more coordinated.
Okay, I think our listeners will remember Connie Rice and her report. We've talked about it a number of times on this program. Chief, as always, thank you very much for being with us.
Okay, pleasure being with you. Thank you.
William Bratton, bye-bye. Chief of Police of the City of Los Angeles. Rich Valdemar worked for the Los Angeles County Sheriff for 33 years, the last of them in a gang unit. He now lives in Arizona, and he's part of a state gang unit there. Rich Valdemar, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
Just interested in your take, given your long experience of the what we just heard from the chief of police of Los Angeles, a man relatively new to the gang problem in Los Angeles.
Yeah, well, yeah, what the chief says, a lot of that, I agree with. I would say that Los Angeles is known as the mother of gangs, 150,000 gang members with 1,000 gangs, and we are exporting our product across the United States and into other countries. Those countries didn't develop the Maricela Trucha, for instance, and send them here. We developed Maricela Trucha and shipped them back to them. In the same way, 18th Street and the Florence Gang, those are the three biggest in Los Angeles, export that violence product across the United States and into other countries.
What's the history of trying to get law enforcement agencies together, to work together, to share intelligence, to do the kinds of things that the chief just talked about?
Unfortunately, we don't have a good track record. The federal government has their own system. We have Cal gangs, but even in our own police departments, we have de-emphasized intelligence. What general on the eve of battle would dismantle its intelligence network? And that's what we do. We also have very restrictive rules governing the use of informants and other things like that, placing people undercover in these gangs and that kind of stuff. We used to rely on that kind of thing to develop information. We don't do that anymore. We largely attack them from the outside using suppressive patrol and that type of thing, which is a temporary Band-Aid and really doesn't solve the problem. And it turns the community against us.
How does it do that?
Well, if you had a little kid and he was like 12 years old, you sent him to the market to get you a half gallon of milk, and he happened to be going to that market, which is probably a liquor store in a bad neighborhood, to pick that half gallon of milk up on his bike, and he gets snatched up in a suppressive patrol sting type thing and gets, proned out or put on a car and interviewed by the local police, and then he gets home late, and his parents ask him where he's been, and he tells them, well, the police stopped me, and they say I'm a gang member, and they had me there with the crackheads and winos that hang out in the parking lot. You see, that type of thing tends to turn the community against you.
Talking to Rich Valdemar, 33 years with the L.A. County Sheriff's Department, 20 years working with gangs, now in Arizona. What about federal agents? How do they do in this regard?
They're probably the worst at handling local street gangs. The federal government, has some good programs and they have some good cops, but most of their police officers come from, colleges, and they get sent to the FBI Academy. Then they come to Los Angeles, where we have just a completely different culture. and they get overwhelmed, and they don't handle the volume that Los Angeles police officers or L.A. County Sheriff's Department or local police officers handle on an everyday basis. They don't have that street connection with the people that work in, you know, in the community and the street gang members on the, you know, actually in the street. So they always rely on law enforcement, local law enforcement, to help them. They do bring, you know, money and resources like witness protection to the table. And when once they are familiar with the gangs, they do produce some cases.
Rick Valdemar, formerly with the L.A. County Sheriff. Alex Sanchez is himself a former gang member. He now works with Homies Unidos. That's a nonprofit gang violence prevention and international and intervention organization, which has projects in El Salvador and Los Angeles. Alex Sanchez, good to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for calling me.
Tell us what's going on in El Salvador, and what about law enforcement there and the possibility of working with U.S. Law enforcement agencies?
Well, various things. You know, one of the things that I got to go back on Mr. Rich Valdemar and what he was talking about, the suppression attempts by law enforcement here, and, of course, also the federal going into and trying to do gang suppression as well, has actually been not fruitful in regards of stopping the youth from getting involved in gangs. They have created this merry-go-round to, you know, deport individuals that are coming back. And they're coming back not because of their choice, because now they also understand that if they come back, they're facing federal charges, reentry charges, that depending on how many felonies they received and how many times they've been deported, they could look up to 20 years in prison here. Many of them will not like to come back. But the reality is that the suppression that's been taking place in El Salvador, Honduras, and Nicaragua, in Guatemala, has been mimicked around some of the suppression methods that have been used here in this country, such as the Zero Tolerance Initiative in New York, such as the gang injunctions here, curfew. All of those have been techniques that are already being used in El Salvador. With the International Law Enforcement Academy, they're also training officers and military on gang tactics and suppression and terrorism tactics in Central America. What that has led is the fact that now you have actually a violation of the peace accords of El Salvador, where the military has gone out there and are actually in the streets, which is where against the truces. What this is creating is an over incarceration of individuals just because they're having tattoos. Individuals such as the example that Mr. Baltimore was using, the kid going to the liquor store. Now, individuals out in Central America could easily get picked up and arrested based on a single tattoo that they have. It doesn't have to be gang related. They are getting arrested and put in prison, and until hearings comes up, such as the gang injunctions here in Los Angeles. What that has created is an overpopulation of the prisons that are not adequately supervised. You're talking about big weapons being inside of those prisons that have created into riots, such as the recent riot 3 weeks ago with 21 members were killed in a prison after breaking down through three walls to get to them. Also, 2 years ago in Honduras, there was a fire that killed 107 gang members. A year prior to that, also in Honduras, we had an incident of 68 gang members that were chopped to death and shot by prison guards. And this is the systematic approach that we've seen used as the extreme suppression that governments get involve themselves in targeting gang violence.
Are there death squads also?
Well, we're talking about death squads, vigilante groups, officers being involved in this type of activity. It's the same style of attacks that happened during the during the war in the 80s, where you find a kid tied up with his hands behind his back and shot in the back of the head.
Alex Sanchez, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're running out of time. We've got somebody else we need to talk to with Omis Unidos. Again, projects in Los Angeles and in El Salvador, and as we just heard, other parts of Central America as well. Tony Rafael is a student of gangs. He's worked for 7 years on a book on the Mexican Mafia. Not his real name, Tony Rafael. I understand that you use a pseudonym because you're worried about your life.
Oh, that's correct. The way I gather information is surreptitious, to say the least. Yeah.
What about the summit that we're now seeing taking place here in Los Angeles, and what do you think about its prospects for any kind of success?
I have good wishes for the success of the project, but I think it's long overdue, and it's something akin to sticking a finger in the dike. I think the flood is already upon us, and it's going to take a tremendous amount of resources and effort on all sides of the border to even keep it at the levels that it is now.
What sustains it? Why do we have a growing gang problem? And it's been going on for so long now, decades here in Los Angeles.
My feeling is that it has become a self-sustaining a subculture. It's a question of kids being raised in gang in families and in neighborhoods where being a member of a gang is an accepted avenue of growing up. That's what you do. And it's an easily transportable phenomenon as well. I mean, there are I've heard of incidents where on Indian reservations the young people there choose up sides, who wants to be a Crip and who wants to be a Blood, and they decide to become a gang. It's become, for lack of a better term, a lifestyle choice. At least in Los Angeles, there are other factors, of course, involved in south of the border in Central and South America, such as, tremendous level of poverty, corruption, and so on. But in the United States, it has become a culture, a self-sustaining underground culture.
Alex Sanchez with Omis Unidos, you were a gang member. Is that a good description, a self-sustaining culture?
Well, the thing is that once a gang stabilizes in the community and reaches out, and they don't have or the youth don't have those resources, and they find those resources that are needed, the gang provides many of the basic needs for shelter, clothing, and food, on top of love, respect, and so on. And economic also, it becomes an economic sustainable thing. The problem is not only that it could be self-sustained, but the problem is that it's a result of a corrupt society. It's the result of negligence by the government in certain communities of color where, those basic needs are not met, and the gang becomes the provider of those basic needs.
Back to Tony Rafael, what about that? Isn't it true that the United States in many ways has the same kind of environment for people that they find in their home countries?
I would disagree with that to a large extent. The levels of poverty and neglect and so on in other countries is nothing. I mean, in this country, it pales by comparison to other things. I mean, even the poorest gang member in the U.S. and in Los Angeles has a car, has access to a car. They have the kind of things that poor people in other countries can only dream about. I'll give you, for instance, there's the Latin Kings were traditionally an East Coast gang. They migrated to Central and South America, and now they're exporting to Spain. And Spain has essentially, I assume, the kind of system that Mr. Sanchez is talking about, a sort of a very progressive cradle-to-grave welfare system and so on, and the Latin Kings are becoming a presence in Spain. They choose to, the Spanish government has even offered to pay them and recognize them as an alternative youth group, something that's akin to a soccer league, if they agree to, and finance them with public money, by the way.
Going to interrupt you again. I'm sorry. Quickly, Alex Sanchez, how do you explain that phenomenon?
Well, the truth of the matter is that the Latin Kings are not in Central America. There was an article that was written that they were in Spain. They were interviewed, but I don't know the depths of that. But in reality is, that we're talking about an approach in suppression where these governments are going to be talking about best tactics to use. And we understand that no matter how you end up dealing with this issue, suppression will not work alone. They are killing them in Central America, literally the scariest straight message, and it has not stopped.
Okay. All right. That's all the time we have. We'll keep talking about this issue. It's very important here in Los Angeles. I want to thank you all for being with us. Alex Sanchez with Omis Unidos, Tony Rafael, writing a book on the Mexican Mafia, Rich Valdemar, formerly with the Sheriff's Department, now in Arizona. Which Way LA, produced tonight by Christian Bordahl and Katie Cooper. Special thanks to Karina Miller, Technical Director Mike Newport. I'm Warman Alney. Join us again for Which Way LA on 89.9 KCRW.
Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.